In this segment of the episode, I'm going to share with you about the laws. Not every single state has the same law. So you got to hear my struggles. And so when I first started homeschooling, the first thing is, what do I do? What can I do? What shouldn't I do? And who's going to have authority over me? When I first started homeschooling, I had no idea what I was doing. Someone had given me the book, The Well-Trained Mind, so I had a pretty good idea of what kind of education I wanted to provide. And in that book, it also shared with me the different types of education that come from different subjects. So, for example, I love Saxon math because it helped me as a parent in my weakness so that I could educate my child. However, I didn't really want engineers at the end of it. So when they got into junior and senior high school, we did a little bit different. But that grammar and the foundation of math is phenomenal. And that's what was needed, especially I was weak in that area. So that was just one of the subjects, but there's so many subjects. So you pick your subjects, you know what you're going to do. Once again, who's going to be your authority? There are websites right on a government website that tell you what's available in your state, what rules are expected in your state. And for me, people were telling me, oh, you have to sign a letter, you have to do this, you have to do that. You know what? Do your own research and get good information from the authority. In this case, the government is the authority of the rules and the laws in your state or your country, wherever you're watching this from. I'm in the United States and I am in Texas, so there's more flexibility in my state. But I know people who have lived in other states and they've chosen to move to a state that fits their value system. We'll talk about that in the next episode. In this one, I'm encouraging you to find what the rules are in your state to start with. Then look at what is available in your community. Social media is pretty good for that kind of thing. So when you're doing research to find out what is in your community, I personally would not necessarily go with the low numbers when you're looking at social media. Ones that have higher numbers usually have more activity, more flexibility, and more information for you. So if your child is in sports and you want to find a homeschool sports team, I believe that you're going to be really amazed when you see what is available for you, social gatherings for sports from track to football. There are homeschool football teams. There are also universities who are open to homeschool students taking classes. It is a plethora of opportunities when you're homeschooling, and making it eclectically fit for your value system, for your end goal for your student. So start with looking at what your state has, looking at what your community has to offer, and doing the research. The other thing I would say is see about finding community. Community is really important, and here's why it's so important. I do not have an eye for everything about my child and my learning style. It was wonderful. I say now it was wonderful. Back then, I wasn't too thrilled with someone pointing out to me, your son needs more help, and here's what I think you should do. I did not like that. But I thank her today for stepping forward and offering me a different opportunity that I never knew about. And so it helped me to teach my son how to read. And I have been so blessed from that day. But at that moment, it kind of stung because, once again, I am perfect. I know everything. And I can share that I don't know everything. But having community come alongside me to help me provide educational holes, I'll say, because I can't teach everything. I can do my very best to do that. But when you're working and you're homeschooling, Get community. It's super important. The government does have guidelines and they're very clear. Sometimes they're a little bit behind. So if you're looking at the government websites, then go down and look into your specific state, because states vary from state to state. So the last readings that I looked up were from 2017. Well, during COVID, we had gone up 40% more were homeschooling and choosing to homeschool even after the school doors were open. So some states might have taken the opportunity to put a little more restrictions on things. So big picture, look at the United States. Step down and look into your state in particular, and then step into your community. I live in Austin, Texas, and there are Austin, Texas homeschoolers. So if you're in San Francisco homeschoolers, Google it. There are organizations in your community that can help you on this journey of homeschooling. But at the end of the day, this is your family, and you are setting the tone in which you're moving in your educational goals for your child. And I want to be here to help you and give you some tips and clues and fun ideas on how you can homeschool your child. But don't always listen to me. You've got to check out what your government regulations are. In homeschooling, rules and laws are changing, and they're changing rapidly because our country is changing rapidly. Look at the different rules and laws. Go back to Prohibition. Right now, you can have alcohol. Then you could not. Look at women voting. Change is happening, and it's happening every day, every year. Okay, mark it on your calendar and check every single year. Have the rules and laws in your state, in your community changed. Just make it a part of your setting up for the next school year, especially if legislation is meeting in your community, then you need to stay on top. You just don't want to get blindsided someplace. So if you're watching it and you're part of community, they're going to be in conversation about it as well. So just put it on your checkoff list. I have a gift for you. Go to my website, and there you'll find resource links for your state laws, for general state laws, and information to help you get on your homeschool journey.
So we just finished talking about laws in your state, and I've given you guidance on where to find the laws in your state. Also, we want to talk about community laws and rules. What are the rules in your community? When I was growing up, my parents had a curfew of the street light. When it came on, you're in the house. Or dinner, you're there. That was the family rule. And I did not realize until I started homeschooling that there is a daytime curfew for kids. I had no idea. And I thought, that is the strangest thing. So anyway, every community has curfew rules, and it could be during the school day as well as at nighttime. So be aware of those in case your kids are not right in front of you, right with you, or they're in a place like a skating rink, a library, out at the park doing their schoolwork. Be aware, someone could approach them. It could be a truant officer. It could be, I don't know, the person who wants to know everything that's going on in their neighborhood. So there are community rules. Got anything on that one?
No, it actually happened to us. We had the kids at the park, and I think they were doing a biology lesson, something on plants, and somebody approached them and said, "Why aren't you in school?" And I says, "We are in school. We're studying plants." But I think they had a little better answer than that. I think the point is to make sure that you've discussed this with your children so that they have a ready answer. They're not surprised, and they know where you are. So, yes, I'm doing a biology lesson. My parents are right over there. We're homeschooled. How are you? Nice, quick, short, to the point. Doesn't alarm anybody. The other thing is, Anna talked about curfews. I don't think it's typically called that during the day, but there are also evening curfews. Some communities say children at a certain age need to be in by 10, And if you're homeschooling and you've kind of shifted your schedule back and you get up late and you stay up late, you might be crossing that. So just pay attention.
Yeah. Always prepare and empower your children with a response. The response that you want them to have that's honoring to your family, that's honoring to them, and honoring to the person that they are speaking to. So that's really important. It's preparing your kiddos. Home rules. Every home is different. Everyone's different. You could all be educating your children, same social economic, same church, same crowd, everything the same, but it's not. Every person is different. Every family is different. And part of your goal in homeschooling is taking who you are and instilling it in your children and not having others indoctrinate them. So we want to kind of talk about some home rules and what they may look like.
Just one quick comment before we get into the rules and then how best to communicate them or implement them is going back to your values. Your home rules as you grew up may be a little bit different than what you want for your family now. That's all right. And in fact, it may be better. But just go back and check in with your values and make sure they align and you don't just fall into the habit of this is the rule because that's always been the rule.
Right. It makes sense to you why a child should not touch the red hot burner. And if you just keep saying, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, if it's our child, they're going to do that. Because that's what a lot of children, they're curious about their world. In child development, one of the first things a human being does is they put things in their mouth. That's how they explore their world. So as they're growing up, they're going to start exploring and doing more things. In our home, if our children got quiet, oh my gosh, go look. Go figure out what's going on. Because our children were experiential experimenters. At one time, I just didn't really pay attention. I was like, whatever, they're quiet. I got a break. Thank you, God. And something blew up in our bathroom. And I didn't know that it was really a blow up thing until I got in there and there's blue sparkles or there. It was a mess. So my point is.
And for years, we were finding blue spots.
Yeah, it was forever. We found blue spots in that room. But another child of ours, when he was quiet, it's because he was reading. And you just knew. You could just kind of, whatever. Now.
So that leads us to, if you will, the first guideline. Stay positive. Simple thing. You know, go outside to run rather than say, don't run inside. There's, we call it child psychology, right? That's a poor phrase, but everybody knows what it means. They're going to test that limit. So stay positive. And then the second piece of it is provide an explanation. Short, simple, straightforward, appropriate for their age. But don't just make it a rule. Tell them why it's there, how it helps them, why it's better or safer for them and for the family.
And one thing that's so important, keep it short.
Yes.
They stop listening really in 15 seconds if they do go that long. It's a miracle. Sometimes you need to realize that a child who's working with Legos, they're really listening to you. They don't have to look at me in the face and those kinds of things to know they're paying attention. Every child is different. See who your child is. Check out how their learning style is. And their learning is not just about book knowledge. It is about how they're taking in the world and how they're looking at the world. And so some of the rules that you may have when our kids got older, this is much older. If you're living with us, you're going to school, to college, trade school. You are preparing to go out on your own, or you just want to go ahead and live on your own. But if you're living with us, our home gets quiet at 10 o'clock at night. Special negotiated times for them being out later, those kinds of things. And the rules you set up are really for their safety. And my kids will tell you, I've always said, nothing happens after midnight that you need to be involved in. Be home, be safe. because it's not always about our child instigating the trouble. They could be part of a group and have some peer pressure, and that's where some trouble comes in. So having your rules in your home, and part of one of the rules we had was Bible study. We all as a family went to Bible studies. We did those things and we studied together. We may talk about it. It may be an individual, but that was one of the rules we had in our home. Boundaries. Look at boundaries.
So another good example of a rule that you might want is how to, and that's designed to protect them. It's not designed as punishment. It's not designed as a restriction. It's strictly for their safety, is how they handle things on the internet, whether it's a phone or a computer, whether they're out in the open and everybody can see what they're doing, or whether you have access to their phone so you can check their texts. Or simple rule we had was, you know, phones are up and they all are on a charging station out front. We had a place in a little table in the hallway where we charged all our phones. And it included ours because we were setting an example and being consistent as well.
So some of the things that also in your home rules and boundaries, whatever you want to call them, it's their job in life is education, and that's their job. And there is relaxation time, there is break time. And as parents, you set the schedule, you set the expectation, and you may get it wrong. I remember for a couple of years, and I'm not kidding, it was a couple of years, it took us to figure out how do we schedule our life. We have someone who needs to be at their sport early in the morning, somebody who goes till late at night, and then there's the midday, and then there's subjects I'm not going to teach. And so when we connect with our community and we go learn those things. So every year we had to balance and shift and change. And sometimes it was on a monthly change. When I first started homeschooling, we were talking every week. Okay, that kind of schedule did not work. So we have to bend and make adjustments to who our children are and how they learn best. And letting your children know, guys, that did not work for me last week. That was too stressful. So this is what we're going to do next week. And if you have dinner together, which I highly recommend, get feedback from your kids. What did they like? What didn't they like? What do they feel they needed? The more your children communicate with you, the more success that you're going to have moving forward. Now, when they get to teenage years, it honestly, you start having some regrets about teaching debate because when they're teenagers, that is growth-wise, that's where they should be. They are master negotiators and debaters, and they are really seeking from you, where's their line, where's their limit. So when you're setting your rules, communicate and understand part of growth is, and in one situation we had was, I had a child who said they wanted to be Roman Catholic and the rest of us were going to non-denominational church. And so on Wednesday nights, I took that child to catechism classes because that's what he wanted. He wanted to explore and he was a young child, but the kids knew from very on, if we're paying for it, if you're signing up for it, and you're making the sacrifice, we will finish the entire year. So it wasn't going to be, oh, that was cute, that was fun, now I'm not having fun, I don't want to go anymore. No, we've paid for it, you've signed up for it, we're doing the whole year. So that is an example of one of the boundaries. And as parents, you have to work around that. And when you set up a boundary like that, you need to make sure it's something that you can live with.
Yeah. You back to the setting example point. Those changes in schedule may be necessary, but until there's clear communication and agreement and it's all set, you're sticking with the boundaries you set up, just like everybody else. Yep.
So I want to talk about the last thing here, when there's violation. As most of you know by now, we used to own a brain integration franchise. And so for 13 years, we worked with families. And one of the things that we would do is have educational nights. And I did an educational night on who's running your home and how to set boundaries and consequences. Not one person showed up. Not one. So then the next time I was like, let's change the title to Punishment, Who's Running Your Home, and Punishments. I got 75 people in the first 2 hours of it being released that we were going to do that. And I was like, wow. But in the talk, I didn't use the words punishment, or I did say who's running your home.
Consequences.
Consequences. What are the consequences for breaking a family value is what it boils down to. So what we're going to talk about is some people call it punishment. Some people call it consequences. So,
well, I think it's, let's turn it around and say, how should you act when there's a violation of a rule or a value? And when you hear us get into this, you'll realize consequences is just one small piece of it. So the first stage, I think, is very important, is stay calm. When things happen, something expensive is broken, somebody gets hurt badly, there's a tendency, it's almost impossible to control, to get very excited. And the first problem with that is overreaction. So first step is stay calm. And I guess I would suggest that you practice it. Start with something small. Something dropped and didn't break. It just made a little splash or a spill. Oh, something dropped. Clean it up. Next.
And just, the key there is the person who dropped it, they clean it up. You don't clean up after them.
Yeah.
That's very important.
Yeah. Now, I think the second thing, slightly contradictory perhaps, but let's be firm. There was a rule. It was broken. We're acknowledging it. Now, we haven't moved into consequences yet. We're saying, you blew it. You're in trouble. We're going to get to you in a minute.
Yeah.
Now, the younger they are, the better, the more important it is to respond. And the younger they are, it's easier to have decided in advance with your partner what's going to be an appropriate response. But as they get older, things get complicated. And you may say, you're in trouble. You know what? We're going to get back to you. And then you got to go talk. Because the worst thing you could do is react. If you react and say, that's it. I'm taking your phone away for a month, or you're grounded forever, or where's the belt, or whatever it is in your house, that could be way off base. That could be totally inappropriate. So yes, you're going to be firm, but you're going to be patient, you're going to be calm, and you're going to make sure that the consequences are appropriate for the violation. And then finally, I think it's important that you be persistent. Maybe that's not the best word. Let me give you an example. You want to follow through and be complete. If it's a young child and the rule is you clean up before you go on to the next, that doesn't mean you pick up 3 toys and go on. You pick them all up and you do it now. You don't run to the bathroom and run outside and throw a tantrum and then finally start picking them up. You pick them up now, you pick them all up, and you move on. As it older, obviously chores change, consequences change, but it's the same concept. We're going to follow through, we're going to be complete. I put that under the category of be persistent.
So one of the things, as he was talking, I was just kind of thinking, one of the things that is really important, and I'm surprised you didn't mention, the both of you need to be on the same page.
So important. So
because important. One parent could be at work all day and the other parent be at home, and one parent says one thing and the other parent doesn't know about it or has some emotional feeling about it, and things look differently. And I know that everyone can relate to this. And my example is going to be dishes. When dishes are done, that means they've been washed, dried, and put away, and actually the floor swept. But anyway, that's what dishes are done. To Eric, it means they're washed and rinsed and put up on the side of the counter for a while. And that just drives me crazy. But we.
What's a drying rack for? No, just kidding.
So that is a small example of something that could be really irritating for me. And so the same thing trickles down to other areas of your life. One of our children said they wanted to go to a party And Eric was like, sure, go ahead. And I'm like, no, math is not done. And that's not really a great discussion to have in front of your child, because I'm coming from, I struggled academically in the areas of math growing up. It was horrific for me. So my passion, my tone, my body language is going to come across that. And his body language is going to be a little different. And your child is watching it. So that's one of the things in the parent reaction. How are you reacting to it?
Yeah, I think everything Anna said is absolutely critical. But I think there's a time before that you need to get together. You need to be, and obviously this depends on the subject. If it's a very simple thing, you can just make the call. But anything complicated and anything that has implications for later, you should get together. And our children, can't believe they're any different than yours, see that so quickly. They immediately notice that a unified front, you're both in agreement. There's no point in arguing. We're going to lose.
Yep.
But if they can form that triangle, boy, they'll try. And I don't think they're doing this purposely.
No, they're not
consciously figuring this out. It's just part of testing boundaries that children do naturally.
Yep.
But they also very quickly realize we're together. It's a joint. We're done.
Yep.
We're following the rules.
And we were not great at it. Don't get this.
We got better.
We got better. And now that we're empty nesters and we've spent 13 years working with families, we can see, wow, where we could have done some improvements. And so that's where grandkids come into your life. So setting examples. Many years ago, I used to be a Dr. Pepper queen. And I had to have like 2 or 3 Dr. Peppers a day. And people at our house knew you don't take the last Dr. Pepper or it'd be terrible. And the kids, we noticed sugar was an issue. And so we stopped them having any kind of sweets at all. And that rhetoric stage was starting to show up. And so I was getting lectures on Dr. Pepper and the sugar count and just all the things. And I ignored them, blew them off, really being rude to my own children about it. I was modeling to them how to ignore me. I was modeling to them that my preference was my preference and I could ignore you. That is a relational mistake that I made. And it took until probably 3 years ago for that one to sink in and for me to finally like, wow. So
I think that's kind of an important thing we want to generalize. She gave you an example of what not to do. But the positive approach here is set a good example. Okay, purposely let them see you. You know, if the rule is clean the dishes after the meal, then you take your dish and go process it properly in the kitchen. And maybe you're first. Maybe you offer to take your partners, but you set that example. And be very careful of thinking you can get away with it, because kids are incredibly observant. They may not say they see it and feed it back to you and lecture you on sugar like happened with our house, but depending on the child, I guarantee they've seen it and it's sinking in, creeping around the corners of, wait, this isn't quite the same, and it will have a huge impact. Along those lines, probably the most important thing you could do is talk about them in front of others. So if I tell my daughter that she did a great job on math, in one ear, out the other. If I tell Anna that, wow, she did very well on her math assignment today, in front of her, she can, not necessarily in front of her, but within earshot, boy, that sinks in. But she heard that and it had an impact.
That's how children are. When their name is mentioned, their ears do perk up. If you say all three of their names, their ears are really perked up, but they are probably around a corner. And doing that, setting an example and empowering your children. I was talking about Dr. Pepper. Our family needed to make that decision together, and we needed to support me in giving up the Dr. Pepper. So when we've worked with families over the years, where we have seen success, especially when modifying foods and there's just certain things that children can't have or you can't have, it's, hey, this is a family decision. we're all going to be giving up dairy or sugar or gluten. We're going to do this together as a family so that when your child goes to someone else's house and pizza is offered, it's like, you know what? Our family doesn't do that. And they have firm groundedness in it. That is what their family is doing. And they're more honoring, but also giving the kiddos the words to use.
Yeah, I think there's one other little point there. And that is, you've given them permission to blame you. So they don't have to stand up for beliefs in gluten or whatever it happens to be. They don't have to explain concepts to their friends. They simply say, I'm not allowed to. Blame it on my parents.
Yep.
It gives them an out that's pretty handy.
So the more you hang out with us, the more you're going to learn about different things. And there's a lot of age-appropriate guidelines that we can go into at another time, or just reach out to us and we'll help you. There's cell phone issues. There's peer pressure, clothing. There are so many things that parents need to address and adjust to. And every year it seems to be something even more.
Yeah.
So we hope this has been helpful, and we look forward to connecting with you.